sea of debris left in our wake, looking as if thousands of people had simply disappeared into the desert. We knew that either way, in victory or defeat, we wouldn't be coming back. Our offensive would be a fourfold attack. Vale's allies' fleets would circle Sivrnaj from the sea, splitting the attention of Simon and Septimus' forces. Rain would spearhead the airborne assault with Vale, bringing hundreds of Rishan and Hiage warriors straight to the inner city. The demons and a smaller team of soldiers would approach by ground, breaking down the barricades and cutting a path to the castle led by Keturah. And finally, Jasmine and I would lead an army into the tunnels, heading directly for the castle itself. Between the two of us, we knew Vincent's secret routes through the city better than anyone. With the sun gone, Sivrnaj had become a ghostly silver outline, ominously lit with the flaring white of nightfire. Sivrnaj was not usually so bright, not even on festival nights. They knew we were coming, and they were preparing for us. Fine, I thought. Let them. The warriors fell into formation, preparing to march. Rain and I took our positions at the front of the group, Jasmine and Vale beside us.
I think we're ready, Highness, Jasmine said quietly, then stepped back.
The world seemed to be holding its breath, waiting expectantly. Waiting for me, for us, to lead.
Mother, what a surreal experience.
It was suddenly dizzying. I glanced at Rain, and I could see the same thought on his face. His brow twitched as he gave me a wry smile.
I suppose that's us, isn't it?
Feels like we should have an inspiring speech, I muttered.
It does. You write anything?
I scoffed.
Shame, he said. You have such a way with words.
I scowled, and he chuckled.
Keep that face. That's better anyway.
My eyes settled on the Sivrnaj skyline, the city that had kept me captive all my life, now captive itself. My kingdom, ready to be liberated. I drew Vincent's sword. As it always did, holding it filled me with a wave of cold strength that reminded me so painfully of my father's presence, its power surging through my veins all at once. I embraced it. Nightfire rippled up the blade, my magic meshing with his.
You have teeth too, little serpent,
he whispered in my ear, and goddess, he sounded closer than ever.
Show them that bite.
There, in that city, waited the men who believed Rain and I did not deserve our crowns. They took his kingdom by force, because it was all they knew how to do. I was tired of letting people like that tell me what I could be, or what the House of Night could be. I lifted my sword, the streak of nightfire blinding against the night sky. Let's take our fucking kingdom back, I snarled. Rain laughed.
I thought you said you didn't have a speech.
He spread those stunning wings and tilted his face to the sky. But before he could take off, I caught his arm. Be careful, I blurted out before I could stop myself. He doesn't deserve to kill you. Rain's eyes remained crinkled with an easygoing smile, but his hand lingered over mine, thumb rubbing back and forth.
Give them hell, princess, he said. I'll see you soon.
I'll see you soon. Such casual words, and such a deep promise within them. We released each other, and a sudden gust of wind blew my hair back as he launched into the air. My gaze settled back on the city ahead, our target. Behind me, a dull roar built slowly, like distant thunder, as hundreds of winged warriors followed Rain into the night. I could feel Jasmine's eyes on me, expectant. I raised the Taker of Hearts and charged.
Chapter 56. Rain. The wind rushed around me, yanking my hair back. Beside me, Vale matched my pace, our warriors behind us, wings spread, cutting through the air. We were flying fast, headed straight for that castle, hedging our bets on how far we could get before Simon sent men out after us. From up here, we could see the fleet in the distance, purple sails tinted blue beneath the moonlight, surrounding the coast of Sivrnaj. Distant sparks flashed through the darkness. explosives and magic hurled at the castle. Nothing that would bring down the city, but it was enough to create a distraction, splitting Simon and Septimus's valuable attention and resources. Far below us, Keturah and her men were reduced to a single wave of destruction. The explosions of nightfire lit up the night with blinding bursts that drenched Sivirnaj in white as the demons tore through stone and wooden barricades to free up paths to the inner city. It was, in a way, morbidly beautiful, like a hand sweeping through sand. It was only a matter of time, though, before the Bloodborne forces flooded the streets to meet her. With Orishan occupying the sky, she'd be forced to take the brunt of Septimus's troops. She was ready for it. The crashes of unbridled chaos below shifted into the cacophony of battle, distant screams and clashes of steel mingling with the explosions and demon snarls. She was evenly matched, but not outnumbered. Not yet. I prayed to the Mother it stayed that way. Vale dipped close to me. "Highness," he said, voice low and serious, and I didn't even have to turn my head to know exactly what he saw by his tone alone. We'd been rushing toward the castle, seizing as much sky as we could before Simon's Rishan men would come to meet us. We'd made it far, now over the tall spires of the inner city, farther, honestly, than I had expected. But the easy part had come to an end. A wave of Rishan soldiers rose from the castle grounds like a thick plume of smoke, a rolling morass of wings and steel blotting out the stars. My heart sank when I saw that wave of soldiers. Vale had only been able to guess at exactly how many Rishan warriors Simon had been able to accumulate. We'd hoped he was relying more on bravado and illusions than numbers. This sight dashed those hopes. This was a real army. Still, attacking by air meant we only had to deal with Simon's limited Rishan forces. We'd prepared for this. I scanned the lines, looking for the man I was really after, the only one I had to kill to end this, once and for all. But I didn't see Simon anywhere in that sea of faces. That surprised me. I was so certain he'd be at the front of the pack, ready to demonstrate his dominance. Hell, I thought he'd want to make sure he was the one to kill me himself. My gaze lifted beyond the onslaught of incoming men, to the silver spires of the Nightborne castle rising above the bloodshed. Or maybe he was cowering in his tower, waiting for me to come to him. I could make that happen, too. Simon's soldiers gained speed, whipping through the air like arrows, and we didn't slow either, bracing to meet them head-on. If they wanted a fight, they'd get a fight. "Ready yourselves!" Vale bellowed, silver wings spreading beneath the moonlight, his own weapon bared. An expanse of steel raised as our opponents charged for us, neither group slowing, neither group hesitating. I was fucking ready. I lifted my sword, and we dove into the wall of death.
Chapter 57. Araya. I didn't know that the tunnels extended this far beyond the castle grounds. I knew that Vincent hadn't trusted me with everything, but sometimes the extent of all he had withheld still threw me. He had always told me that the passages were through the castle grounds only, but Jasmine led us through a little shack on the outskirts of the city and through a trap door in its dirty, fully furnished bedroom that led down into the tunnels. I didn't even have time to be bothered by this now. Of course, Vincent wouldn't have told me about tunnels beyond the grounds. He wanted me to stay exactly where I was, safely within the walls of his castle. Why should I be surprised? We moved swiftly, though the tunnels, narrow as they were inefficient for this number of people. We'd prepared ourselves for potential confrontation down here. We couldn't know how much of the tunnel system Septimus had discovered, but didn't encounter a soul. A stroke of luck. Any battle within these narrow passages would be a disaster. The halls were too dark for my human eyes, but the night fire in my blade lit the way. I didn't consciously intend to run, but my steps grew quicker and quicker the closer we got to the heart of Sivirnaj. Once we encroached upon the inner city, we started to hear the clashes above. The sounds started off muffled and dull, the distant rumbles of cracking wood and crumbling stone, the sporadic blasts of explosives. Keturah's troops, traveling over the streets above us, breaking down the barriers between us and the castle with the help of the demons and the nightfire explosives. The sound raised goosebumps on my arms, in anticipation, not dread. This was what we were supposed to be hearing. That, at least, was the sound of progress. Soon those echoes grew louder as the tunnels grew wider and better lit. We were reaching the inner city, moving steadily toward our final destination. That was when things started to change. The noises from above were now loud enough to vibrate the walls, the worst of them sending waterfalls of dust and dirt falling from the ceiling, the nightfire flames shivering with the impact. A knot of unease started in my stomach, though I told myself that we were expecting things to get harder as we progressed. We were prepared for this. But when a particularly loud boom made the ground itself lurch, sending both Jasmine and I stumbling against the walls, we exchanged a wary glance. Jasmine walked faster, shouting urgent commands to those that followed us. But my steps faltered. It wasn't the sound exactly that did it. It was something deeper, something in the air itself that I couldn't put a name to. It buried under my skin, more persistent than the anxiety of battle, a force pulsing against my magic, a toxic smoke clinging to the inside of my lungs. It was silent, it was invisible, and it was everywhere. 50 years ago, a volcano on one of the Nightborn Islands erupted, killing every living thing on it. Every living thing except for the birds, which all disappeared 6 hours before, flying off in one sky-darkening flock. Was this, I wondered, what the birds had felt like that day? I doubled my pace, catching up to Jasmine, then overtaking her. She shot me a look that had me wondering if she'd felt what I did too. I'd never seen her show anything close to fear, and still, this wasn't fear, not quite. But it was close enough to be almost as unnerving. "Did you?" she started, but I cut her off. "We need to get up there." The words flew from my lips before I knew exactly how true they were. "We need to get up there, now."
Chapter 58. Rain. I'd lost track of just how many men I'd killed. I was in the Qajari all over again, thrown into senseless, indiscriminate, unending violence. Maybe I wasn't any better than Nikolai, or Vincent, or Simon, after all. Maybe I was just another cursed king. Because I fucking loved it. I barely felt the scream of my muscles or the bite of my wounds. Something more primal took over. Rational thought disappeared. My magic surged in my veins, grateful for the opportunity to finally be set free, fully unleashed. And this was what it wanted to do. Kill. Reclaim. Possess. I wasn't relying on sight anymore, and that was a gift because I couldn't see anything even if I'd tried. Through the smears of black blood in my eyes, my field of vision became nothing but fragmented flashes of wings and weapons and steel buried in bodies. The blinding black-white of my asterisk followed my every stroke. Defeated enemies hurtled to the ground like limp rag dolls, falling onto the roofs of the buildings below. Time, physicality, space ceased to exist. I thought about nothing but the next strike, the next kill, the next inch of ground I could gain toward that castle. My castle. Until him. The shift was immediate, so strong it actually managed to knock me from my bloodlust, so strong it made my muscles freeze at the most inopportune moment, interrupting my counter against the Rishan soldier attacking me and earning me a vicious cut over my shoulder. I grabbed the soldier, skewered him, and let him fall to the ground, but I wasn't looking at him anymore. Instead, my gaze flicked up. Up to the castle. Simon was there, standing on the very same balcony where he had tried to kill me. Even through the carnage, through the endless bodies, I knew he was there. I knew it because I felt him, the way one felt ripples in a pond when something terrible circled beneath the water. And this was something terrible. I had never sensed anything like this before, but that certainty ground into my bones immediately. I'd awakened something primal in myself, and now that beast was recognizing a threat that did not belong here or anywhere else. What was that? I was too far gone to be afraid. I'd spent too damned long fearing Simon and people like him, even if I refused to admit it to myself or anyone else. I was pushing through the warriors before Vale even had the chance to call after me, cutting through bodies, wings, weapons, anything standing between me and him. I was going to fucking kill him. He stood on the balcony waiting for me, amber wings spread, sword drawn, hair pulled back tight in a way that emphasized the hard, cruel planes of his face. I didn't slow down as I flew for him. Instead, I pumped my wings, surging faster, so fast I couldn't see anything but his slow, predatory smile, split seconds before we clashed. We met in a deafening thunderclap of steel and a burst of magic, my asterisk dousing us in a mantle of black light. Our bodies slammed against each other. His sword met mine, metal screaming against metal. Immediately he countered. He was a strong warrior, even after all these years. Despite his age, he met me strike for strike, step for step. Even my magic didn't seem to deter him. Even though, spurred by hatred, it poured from every stroke of my blade, punctuating each clash. I was wounded, I was tired, my body didn't care. I was going to kill him. Through the red of my rage and the black of my asterisk, Simon's face looked so uncannily like his cousin's. It was my former master who sneered at me in the seconds between strikes and blocks, taunting me, urging me on. How many times back then had I imagined what it would be like to kill Nikolai? Countless. 70 years, 25,000 days to lie there in bed and close my eyes and think about what he might sound like with blood filling his lungs. Think about what it might look like to peel his skin back inch by inch. Think about whether he'd piss himself in his final moments. I'd thought about it so many times. I wasn't the one who had gotten that satisfaction in the end. That had gone to another cruel king. I'd told myself I was all right with that. Let them tear each other apart. I'd been lying to myself. I had wanted to be the one to do it, and now this seemed almost as good. The first time I struck skin, opening a river of red-black across his arm, I actually fucking laughed, loud and crazed. That one drop of blood awakened something in me. My next blow was harder, faster, blade seeking out his flesh like a starving animal. When he managed to get in a return strike, I barely felt it, instead using the force of his hit against him. I was so lost in my own frenzy that it took me far too long to notice exactly what was so off about him. To notice that Simon didn't seem concerned at all, even though I'd wounded him. Not even when I struck him again, sending him staggering back. I pushed him against the wall, licks of night rolling from my sword, the smell of his blood thick in my nostrils. This was it. I wanted to look into his eyes when he died, wanted that satisfaction. I wanted to see fear on his face when he realized that the slave he had abused 200 years ago was going to be the one to kill him. But when I met Simon's eyes, I didn't see fear. I didn't see much of anything, actually. They were vacant and bloodshot, glazed over like he was looking through me instead of at me, at something a million miles past the horizon. A sour drone thrummed in the air, nagging at my magic, burrowing deep into my veins. I hesitated, and finally I heard the voice in my head, the one that insisted, "This isn't right." My eyes flicked up for a moment, catching movement through the glass window over Simon's muscled, armored shoulder. Septimus stood in the middle of the empty ballroom, enjoying the view through those floor-to-ceiling windows, utterly calm. He smiled at me, a lazy trail of cigarillo smoke rising between his teeth. "This isn't right," Simon wasn't moving, even though I had him pinned. The pulse in the air grew thicker, louder. The unnatural ripples that called to my magic seemed to pull tighter, like lungs inflating in an inhale, drawing me closer. I actually took in Simon's appearance for the first time since I saw him, my head clearing. He wore old, classic Rishon battle leathers. Finely made stuff, but oddly enough, he'd left the top unbuttoned down to his chest, revealing a long triangle of skin. Skin marked with black, pulsing veins. And all those veins led to a chunk of silver and ivory buried right into the flesh of his chest. It was so grotesque, so unnervingly wrong, that at first I couldn't make sense of what I was looking at. And then I recognized it. The silver was Vincent's pendant, smashed and melted and warped, smeared with Simon's blood. And the ivory was teeth. Teeth welded into the metal. The memory of Septimus's voice floated through my mind. "I found some in the House of Blood. Teeth. What the fuck does one do with the teeth of the God of Death?" Aurea had asked. And in a sudden moment of clarity, I realized. This was what someone did with God teeth. They created a fucking monster. This thought crossed my mind only briefly as Simon's face finally broke into a chilling, blood-lined smile, and he unleashed a burst of magic that rearranged the entire goddess-damned world.
Chapter 59. Aurea. I was running through those tunnels, even though I'd outpaced Jasmine, even though I didn't even know exactly where I was going, only that I was going up and out as fast as I possibly fucking could. We were, thankfully, close to the end. I practically wept with joy when I saw the stairs before me. I dove up them, flinging open the door at the other side, taking only seconds to evaluate where I was at the foot of the castle. Mother, it was chaos out here. Flinging me into a sea of blood and steel and death, Bloodborne and Rishon and Hiage and demons all ripping each other apart. I barely paid attention to it. Instead, I looked up. Up to the top of the castle, to the balcony where I had saved Rain's life not long ago. I couldn't see anything from this angle, but I could feel it. The epicenter of this noxious sensation. My wings were out and I was in the air before I could question myself. I'd never flown so fast before, faster than I even knew I was capable of. I rose to the balcony, only to immediately be knocked back by... What was that? It was like Asterisk, maybe, but stronger. Red, not black. It seemed to rip apart the air itself and reorder it. It lasted for only a moment. At least I thought it did. But when I regained awareness, my wings weren't working, and I was falling. With a gasp of air, I righted myself, pumping my wings just in time to avoid hurling myself into a pillar. I soared back up to the balcony. Rain, locked in a battle with... Mother, was that Simon? He looked so different. Not just because of his armor, a stark contrast from the fineries I'd seen on him before, or even because of the whirls of red magic that surrounded him. He felt different. Like he'd been pushed beyond some boundary that no mortal should cross. Like a part of him no longer even existed anymore. Every shred of my awareness balked at his presence. And that instinct reacted viciously at the sight of Simon leaning over Rain, sword raised, eerie red mist clinging to the blade. I didn't remember landing, or running, or lunging. Only the satisfying spurt of blood that sprayed across my face as the Taker of Hearts found its mark skewering through Simon's back right between his wings. A deadly shot for anyone, human or vampire. But Simon, I realized immediately, was not just a vampire right now. He let out a snarl and reared back, dropping Rain and whirling to me as I yanked my sword from his flesh and danced backward. When his bloodshot eyes fell to me, vacant and vicious, I felt like I was looking into the face of death itself.
And then I saw it. The thing fused into the skin of his chest. Metal and bone? My magic reacted to its proximity. Suddenly, Vincent's presence seemed so much closer, but twisted, enraged. Twisted, just like the pendant had been twisted, shattered, melded with teeth? God teeth, I realized. Fucking Septimus. It seemed outlandish. It seemed ridiculous. The horror of it fell over me distantly. I didn't have time to let myself acknowledge it. He lifted his sword, but before he could bring it down, I lunged at him. He responded immediately, our blades meeting, each clash more vicious than the last. He was bigger, stronger. I was faster. Still, he kept pace. My body crumpled beneath his blows and the force of it required to deflect them. It took all my focus, but I remained perpetually aware of rain out of the corner of my eye, crumpled on the ground. When he slowly pushed himself up, I breathed a sigh of relief. For a split second, before Simon was on me again. My muscles screamed. His magic rivaled mine, even as my nightfire poured from my skin surrounding us. The burns didn't seem to bother him, not even when the flames ate away at the delicate flesh around his mouth and eyes. He just stared through them and smiled. An empty smile. A dead smile. I couldn't remember when his first hit was. My side, perhaps, making me stumble just enough to make it difficult to evade his next lunge. When I looked up again to see his sword raised, I thought, this is it, the end. Just as a streak of black-red came hurling in from his left side, sword drawn. Rain threw himself at Simon, the two of them tangling in a dance of destruction. I hadn't been able to hear anything over the violence and my own breath and heartbeat throbbing in my ears. But as I steadied myself, I chanced a glance down below, to the city of Sivrenage. It was a bloodbath. Our opponents had been holding back. Now, the full numbers of bloodborne forces poured from the castle grounds, seeping through the city's streets like a wave of fire. Katura's men had been beaten back, the squeals of dying demons drowning beneath the screams of dying vampires. Jasmine's forces had risen from the tunnels, only to be met with a formidable force that was expecting them, and far outnumbered them. And Simon, and whatever terrible twisted magic he wielded, hadn't even made it down there yet. We were fucked. We were utterly fucked. We needed to retreat. We needed to retreat now. Rain had seen what I did, or maybe the dawning horror on my face told him everything he needed to know. When I launched myself back at Simon, he rasped out, "Go." The one word he could choke out. I knew what he meant. Go to the armies. Go lead them away. I didn't even consider it. We had only one shot at salvaging this, and that was by killing Simon here and now. I wasn't going to run away. I wasn't going to leave this man here to keep my throne and this twisted power he'd gotten from my father's magic. I'd had enough. My entire life, these people thought they could take everything from me. And the thought of ceding one more single second to them enraged me. My heartbeat throbbed in my ears, hot beneath my skin. "This is my kingdom," Vincent whispered, the words pulsing through my skin, my veins, my heart. "This is my castle. Do not let anyone take it from me." Mine, my heartbeat echoed. This was mine. I would not let anyone take it away. And I sure as fuck wasn't going to let them kill Rain to do it. Rain whirled around as more Rishon soldiers ran from the castle doors, surging for him, distracting him in this critical moment. Not me. I barely noticed them. I let my rage blind me. Drive me, drown me as I threw myself at Simon. My awareness narrowed to the satisfying sensation of my blade parting Simon's flesh, the nightfire swelling and overtaking my body, my magic flourishing in the depths of my uncontrollable rage. Simon actually flinched, his body lurching. Someone laughed, and it took a few seconds to realize that it had been me.
My cheeks split with a smile as he straightened and faced me, all that terrible power focused only in one spot. I wasn't afraid. We lunged at the same time, our weapons meeting again, each blow unrelenting. At first, I was lost in the intoxicating haze of vengeance, and I loved it. Each wound a shot of alcohol. An unnatural high. But Simon didn't let up. Rain, surrounded by Rishon's soldiers, was not coming to help me. And Simon just kept coming, and coming, and coming. The first little nagging shard of fear came when he struck me so hard, I thought I felt something crack when I blocked his weapon. The pain shot through me in a lightning bolt, stealing my breath. No time to recover, though. No time to counter. Because the onslaught continued. That one devastating strike turned to two, three. Soon, I couldn't do more than evade, block, stumble backwards to get my footing. But I'd been knocked off balance, and I had no time to regain it. The realization that I was fucked was slow and certain. He opened a wound on my shoulder, my arm, my hip. Each one came with a breathtaking stab of pain, deeper than flesh. His magic, that red, noxious smoke, surrounded us both. The twisted creation in his chest pulsed unnaturally. I could feel Vincent's cold rage, his need for dominance, thrashing inside me, but it had nowhere to go. The magic of the Taker of Hearts was powerful, but it wasn't as strong as whatever Simon had done to himself. I leapt backward in a dodge and found myself against the balcony railing. Fuck! Nowhere left to go. A hot breeze surged, blowing my hair back and yanking strands of Simon's from its binding, making him look even more monstrous as he loomed over me, a bloody smile spreading over his lips. Behind him, Rain's eyes locked onto me as he cut through one Rishon soldier, too. He wouldn't be fast enough. Mother, I was going to die. But oh, what a death it will be. I wondered if it was Vincent's voice or mine. Simon reached out and touched my face, turning it toward his, as if in curiosity. His smile soured.
"Just a human," he said. "That's all."
A fighter's death, I promised myself, as Simon raised his sword and I raised mine. His strike was devastating. A burst of magic blinded me. A deafening crack left my ears ringing. Something sharp flew back against me, opening little cuts in my cheeks, my arms. I barely felt them because the pain was everywhere. Simon had staggered backwards, doubled over, but it was too late. I was falling too. My body went over the railing in what felt like slow motion. The last thing I saw was Rain, his eyes wide and terrified as he yanked his sword from a body and ran for me. He looked so scared. I reached for him, but I was already falling. Worlds blended together in my weightlessness. In one world, I couldn't hear anything over the sound of screams and explosions and desperate commands. In another, I could hear nothing but my father's voice from an old memory. Could feel nothing but his grip, so firm it hurt. But then again, that was Vincent's love, hidden in sharp edges, and always just as painful.
"I told you not to climb that high," he said, voice harsh. "How many times have I told you you can't do that?"
"I know," I wanted to say. "I'm sorry. You were right."
"Aurea!"
Rain's scream cleaved through the air, even through the sounds of a kingdom falling. I forced my eyes open to see smears of blurring color. He was diving down after me, wings spread, covered in blood, a single hand reaching out for me. Something about this image looked so familiar, and then it clicked. The painting of the Rishon man falling, one hand outstretched. I'd always thought he was reaching for the gods. He was reaching for me. Everything went black.
Chapter 60. Rain. Retreat. I flew over the battlefield, a sea of carnage, Aurea's limp body in my arms. She was covered in so much blood I couldn't even tell where she was injured, only that whatever Simon had done to her had been devastating. She wasn't dead. She couldn't be dead. I could feel her heartbeat, slow and weak. I refused to accept the possibility that it would stop. That was not an option. She was not dead. I knew Simon was not far behind me, launching himself down into the fighting. And I knew the minute he landed it would be over for all of us. Retreat. I found Vale in the midst of the bloodshed, hacking apart a Rishan rebel who plunged from the sky. I didn't recognize my own voice when I screamed his name. He turned and took in Araya and I in less than a second, his brow immediately contorting in grim dread. Then his eyes lifted over my shoulder and widened. Simon. I just choked out. Retreat! Now! Get as many out as you can! And I didn't stop flying. I needed somewhere safe, somewhere close, somewhere secret. Somewhere no one would think to look for her. Somewhere she could get help now. Right now, because I wasn't about to let her die in my arms after everything we had been through together. Couldn't go back to the camp. No one could help me there, not fast enough. Couldn't get back to the rendezvous point in time. Couldn't go anywhere in Sivrenage, where Simon and Septimus would be looking for her. My thoughts did not make sense. I didn't know how or why I chose our destination. It wasn't a conscious choice. Just the memory of a name and a place scribbled on a 25-year-old letter, and blind hope, and sheer fucking desperation. Some distant part of my subconscious made the decision without me, while I could think about nothing but Araya in my arms, and her limp body, and her heartbeat, growing steadily slower, weaker. Vartana was not far from Sivrenage, just a few cities over. It was a small town, barely noticeable from above, the kind of place you only went to if you had a reason. I half surprised myself when I landed clumsily in the dusty streets of the human districts. They had to help her. They had to. I was in the town square. It was quiet here after nightfall. I barely glanced at my surroundings, the brick buildings, the packed dirt streets, the fountain well at the center of the square. A young couple was perched at its edge, probably interrupted from some midnight tryst, staring at me in wide-eyed shock. I was only distantly aware of what I must have looked like, landing in front of them, clutching Araya's bleeding body. Wide-eyed, enormous, covered in blood. The man pushed the woman behind him slightly, the two of them staggering back. I just choked. Help! I need help! The name. Fuck, what was the name? Alya, I blurted out. Alya, there's someone here by that name, a healer, or there used to be. I couldn't even string a goddess-damned sentence together. What was I doing? What kind of wild guess was this? 20 years was a long time. Who knew if they were even still? Araya's breath stuttered, slowed, and my panic overwhelmed me. Tell me. I ground out, taking a step closer. The woman nearly threw herself into the fountain, trying to get away from me, the man grabbing her arm and sliding fully in front of her. They were terrified, and I couldn't even blame them for that. Or at least I wouldn't have if I could even think, could even breathe, could even consider anything but, "I'm Alya," a voice came from behind me. I whirled around to see a middle-aged woman standing in a townhouse doorway, eyeing me warily. She had waist-length, black, gray-streaked hair and a serious-lined face. I drew in a shaky breath and let it out.
I know who you are.
Her gaze fell to Araya, and her face softened.
I know who she is, too.
My exhale of relief was almost a sob. Can you come in? She said, stepping aside.
Quick! And stop yelling before you alert half the district.
Part 6. Full Moon. Interlude. It's not that hard to topple a kingdom. It is already poised to collapse. And a slave is the perfect person to knock out those final remaining supports, privy to the most intimate parts of the castle, and yet utterly invisible. The slave marvels at the fact that it had never even occurred to him to do this sooner. It's so easy, so well deserved, so much more elegant than the blade driven through his master's chest that he always had dreamed of. He passes information to that promising Hyaj contestant throughout all 4 months of the Qajari. He feeds him guard schedules, castle layouts, fortification weak points. He watches the measures that his king takes to protect himself as the days pass and his paranoia grows stronger. And he feeds those along to the Hyaj contestant too. He is careful. He never reveals his face. He never reveals his name. He never whispers a word of it to anyone, not even the queen in their secret daylight meetings. The knife he drives into his captor's back is so slow and silent, he doesn't even feel it at all. Weeks pass, months. The Hyaj contestant, as everyone knew he would be, is victorious again and again. The king grows more cruel, vicious in his fear. The slave's hatred becomes a quiet obsession. And then, at last, the night has come. The final night of the Qajari. The night the future king and the slave alike will offer up their final, devastating blows. The Hyaj contestants will come in the form of a blood-soaked victory and a wish from a goddess. The slaves will come in the form of a letter overflowing with secrets, passed off in exchange for the guaranteed safety of those closest to him. It is eerily quiet in the moments before the world changes. The sunset is still and stagnant. The slave has made his final move. Now all that is left to do is wait. And in those quiet moments, he finally tells the queen. They had spent the evening hours together, her head against his chest, his hand rubbing her shoulders. He stared sleeplessly at the ceiling, thinking of all the ways everything will soon change. He wakes her gently as the sun slips below the horizon, only an hour remaining until the kingdom collapses. The words pour from his lips. He feels like he is offering her a precious gift that he has been saving for a very long time. And then, finally, he intertwines her fingers with his. "We need to leave tonight," he tells her. "Right after the Qajari ends. He'll be distracted. If he's even still alive by then, we can get out of Sivrinaj before the worst begins." He expects joy. Instead, she is horrified. She shakes her head. "You have to undo it," she says. "This can't happen." He doesn't know what to say for several long seconds. "It's already done," he tells her. "It's already over." Her face crumples like she knew he would say this. But the truth still hurts just as much. "I can't," she says. "I can't go with you. I need to stay here." His heart sinks. He spends those final minutes of their old life begging her to leave with him. And right up until the end, right up until she is prying her hands out of his, she refuses. They have no more time. The final trial is about to begin, and at last she grabs his face and kisses him fiercely. "You go," she whispers. "But I cannot leave him. Not now." For centuries, the slave would think about this moment. Why? Why would she choose to die in her cage rather than find freedom? Everything within him rebels against the thought of leaving her. But he has worked for this for too long. As he sits behind his master in the Colosseum, stands for that final trial, he stares at the back of the queen's head and imagines carrying her out over his shoulder when he goes. He is not watching the battle. He knows when it is over by the scream of the spectators, deafening, bloodthirsty. The sky shifts. Fragments of unnatural light circling above. The air holds its breath, anticipating the impending arrival of a goddess. The king rises, his eyes locked to the sky. But while everyone else is staring to the heavens, the queen simply looks over her shoulder at the slave. Her lips form a single silent word. Go. And he does. He travels on foot first, favoring stealth over speed. He has no possessions and very little money. He has nowhere to go other than anywhere but here. He hears it echo through the air when the Yarj Victor takes his prize. The screams and cheers pierce the night, as if the House of Night is a single dying beast letting out a final roar. Don't look back, he tells himself. It doesn't matter. Yet for some reason he still does. He's at the outskirts of the city by then, wings outstretched, ready to take to the sky to make his final escape. The urge is sudden and overpowering, like a set of ghostly hands pulling him back. He turns. The Colosseum is alight, bright and throbbing like an infected wound ready to burst. His gaze lingers there, but then rises. Rises to the stars where the strange shimmering light of the gods still hovers. And he suddenly cannot move. Nyaxia is far away, floating up in the heavens as if observing the amusing consequences of her latest gift. But one can always feel a god's eyes. And Nyaxia looks directly at him that night. He can feel her stare like a blessing, a curse, an iron stake nailing him to a destiny he does not want. And she smiles, a cruel, beautiful, devastating sight. He tries to tell himself that he does not sense what changes in this moment. He tries to tell himself that he imagines the dizzying, disorienting burst of power through his veins. He tries to tell himself that the sudden shock of pain up his spine is a figment of his anxiety. But the truth is the truth. This is the moment when the slave becomes a king. He turns away from the goddess, flying off into the night. Later, safely holed up in a little village where no one would ever think to look for him, he will stare in shock at the red ink on his back. He will pay some starving beggar without a tongue all the money he has to help burn his back, burn it so brutally he nearly kills himself until the scars are so bad they swallow the mark. He is no king, he tells himself. He is no heir. He is just a free man, for the first time in nearly a century. But just because one tells themselves something, understand, that does not make it true. This is only the first night of thousands the turned king will spend lying to himself. It will be 200 years before he would accept the truth.
Chapter 61. Araya. I opened my eyes. Some innate part of me expected to see the cerulean of my chamber's ceiling at the castle, smell the familiar scent of rose and incense. But no. The ceiling was old, haphazard wooden boards. The room smelled like lavender and the burnt wood of a fireplace. So unfamiliar, and yet so recognizable, in a way I couldn't place, like the scent called to a version of myself I'd long ago forgotten. I turned my head and was greeted with a wave of truly agonizing pain. But I was alive. I was actually alive. As pieces of the battle came back to me, Simon's monstrous face leaning over me, that seemed like a fucking miracle. My eyes focused. I was in a tiny bedroom, lying in an old, beaten-down bed, covered with a quilt that was obviously homemade. Before me was a closed, slightly crooked wooden door, with a little wooden chair sitting beside it. And in that chair, that tiny, rickety chair, comically overflowing it, was Rain.
He snored slightly. His head tipped back against the wall, skewed at a painful-looking angle. His arms were crossed over his chest. He wore plain cotton clothes that looked within one sneeze of bursting open at the seams. Dark, dried bloodstains marred the cream fabric, and his forearms were wound in tight bandages. My eyes prickled. I stared at him, the image growing slowly blurry. My chest was so tight, I didn't think it had anything to do with my injuries. I sniffed, and Rain had been sleeping so lightly that the sound was enough to send him jerking awake with comical verve, nearly throwing himself off the chair as he reached for the sword that wasn't there. I couldn't help it. I laughed. The sound was horrible, a gasping rasp. Rain barely managed to right himself. Then his gaze fell to me. He went utterly still. And then, with a single swift movement, he was on his knees beside my bed, hands cradling my face like he wanted to make sure I was real. "You're alive," I wanted to say. But all I could choke out was, "Did I scare you?" I was smiling, laughing a little, though the sound was almost a sob. And soon Rain was laughing too, and he kissed my face, my forehead, my brows, my nose, and finally my mouth, leaving the taste of tears on my lips. "Don't you ever do that to me again," he said. "Never fucking again." The door opened. A woman stood in the frame, holding a mortar and pestle in one hand, like she'd rushed over so fast she hadn't even had the time to put down what she was doing.
"I heard..."
But then her eyes found mine, and the words died. I couldn't speak either. Nor could I look away, because, goddess, she looked so familiar that everything else fell away. Those green eyes reminded me so much of someone I used to know. She let out a long breath. "You are awake," she said, at the same time that I said, "I know you." Those eyes crinkled with a sad smile. "I didn't think you would remember me." I didn't know if I did remember her exactly. It was more like recognizing an innate familiarity. My words trailed off. I wasn't sure what I was trying to say or how to name what I was feeling. She stepped into the room and closed the door behind her. "I'm Alia," she said. "I'm your aunt." Alia, brusque and businesslike, insisted upon examining me before we talked about anything more. So while she checked my pulse and redressed my bandages, Rain answered all the questions he already knew I would ask. We hadn't been here long, he told me, only a day. The others had retreated to the rendezvous point outside of Sivrnaj, in one of the cities that the Hiage had managed to maintain control of, but it was just a matter of time until Simon would go after them there. They were licking their wounds, too, and would fall back farther to the cliffs when given the command. The battle, in short, had been a fucking disaster. Yes, we'd managed to destroy most of the defensive measures around Sivrnaj, and if nothing else, we'd managed to kill a large number of Simon's forces. But he'd killed plenty of ours, too. And what Septimus had done to Simon? The pendant? The teeth? Mother, had I imagined that? It felt like a dream. A goddess-damned nightmare. Where the hell did we go from here?
"We have to go back," I said.
"Not until you can travel," he said.
"I feel..."
Fine, shockingly enough. I actually did feel fine. Dizzy, yes, weak. But miraculously healed, all things considered. Alia was behind me, administering medicine to a wound on my back. It hurt, making me draw in a hiss through my teeth. But the pain was manageable. Pain wasn't death. I looked down at my arms, where I knew I'd been wounded badly. Only faint red marks remained, scabbing over with dark red. Rain followed my gaze, a faint smile twisting his lips.
"It turns out your aunt is a hell of a healer."
"We had some help," she added, "from his blood."
Everyone was speaking as if this was all very normal. But the normalcy of it was the most confusing of all.
aunt. God has helped me. I didn't even know where to start.
How did you know to bring me here?
I asked Rain. His smile faded, like he was slipping back into that memory.
Honestly, he said, I don't have a damned clue. I knew the name from your mother's letters and the city. I knew whoever had written them was a healer, and I was desperate. I didn't know where to go. Not sure why I ended up here.
Behind me, Alia let out a low laugh. Fate, she said. It's beyond mortal understanding. I wasn't sure if she was joking or not. She had a flat affectation that sounded like it could be either blunt seriousness or dry humor. Still, either way, I couldn't help but agree with her. She lifted my left arm, checking a bandage around my shoulder.
You're lucky he thought to bring you here, she said. Nyaxia's magic wouldn't have been able to help you nearly as well.
What magic is this? I asked.
Acacias.
Vampire magic alone wouldn't have been able to save you. Alia let my arm fall and stood, repositioning herself at the foot of the bed so I could see her. She had a steady, piercing gaze. I didn't like it. It felt like she could see far too much of me. That stare slid away like it made her uncomfortable, too.
Never thought some 25-year-old letters from my sister would lead us here. I'll tell you that much.
Vincent's lies had shattered my belief in fate. But the fact that Rain had found those letters,
this name, this place, the fact that he'd thought to bring me here of all places when in his panic,
it felt something like it. Rain looked a little pale. I wondered if he was having the same thoughts about luck and all the ways ours could have been different. I touched his hand without thinking, sliding over his rough skin. He flipped his palm up, fingers closing loosely around mine. My eyes fell to the bedspread and Alia's weathered, bony hands sitting atop it. The sight struck me with another dizzying wave of familiarity. Those hands. I remembered holding those hands long ago.
Yours are so much more wrinkly than Mama's. That's not very polite, Araya.
I lived with you, I blurted out.
Alia's brow twitched, only the faintest hint of surprise.
I didn't think you would remember that. You were very, very young.
She looked around the little bedroom. You were born here, actually, in this room.
That was a hard day. Wasn't sure if either of you would make it. I was doing everything I could to heal you both, but...
She blinked, as if clearing away the past.
I haven't felt that way in a long, long time.
Not until he showed up yesterday.
Brings back a lot of memories.
Goddess, I never thought I would ever have someone look at me the way she was now, with the nostalgic affection of a shared past. I had so many questions.
And then finally, my mother... My voice trailed off. I didn't even know what I wanted to know first. Everything, anything. A smile softened the hard lines of Alia's mouth. She was wonderful, and she was obnoxious.
She was an acolyte of Acacia, too. I didn't know why I was so eager to say that, to demonstrate that I knew something about her.
Yes, it was her idea, actually. We were both young, growing up here in the human districts of Vartana. And this life is a hard one for humans in Obitrace. Vartana isn't as bad as Sivrenage or Salane, but there are limits to what a human can do with their lives in this kingdom. Alana never accepted that, though. She was ambitious, a dangerous quality for someone in her position. She was blessed with a touch for magic. And rather than pursuing the arts of Nyaxia, knowing she could never be more than passable at it, she decided to go... in a different direction.
Acacia, I said, and Alia nodded.
Yes. The only other god that would allow their gifts to be used by someone in Obitrace, even a human.
But it was about more than that for Elena.
She liked that Acacia was the goddess of lost things. She felt like we were all lost. Needed someone to guide us back. Eventually, I came to believe it too, and studied alongside her. Without meaning to, I'd started leaning across the bed as if to get close enough to absorb the words into my skin. With each one, I painted color into that old ink portrait of my mother. So my mother was a healer? I asked. No, I was always the better healer. She didn't have the patience for it. Besides, I think it was too small for her. She wanted something big, something grand. She experimented with sorcery, with searing. Alia laughed a little. I always used to be after her for choosing the most useless skills to focus on. She told me they'd be useful one day. Just wait. Then the smile went cold. I suppose that turned out to be true. When word got around that Vincent was looking for seers. She said Vincent's name like a curse, something dirty to be expelled. My eagerness snuffed out like a candle, leaving behind only dread. So many things I needed to know, so many things I did not want to hear. No one could stop her, Alia went on. She wanted something more than this place, this life. So she went to Sivrinage and offered herself up to him. She told us this was her chance at becoming something important. Money, safety, not just for her, she said, but for all of us. She shook her head. I begged her not to go, she murmured. But there was no reasoning with her. I clasped my hands together, knuckles white. My body had gone rigid like I was bracing for a blow. Maybe Rain sensed this, because he put his hand on my back. And Mother, I was so grateful for that single steadying touch. I had cursed Vincent in my own head countless times, screamed into my pillow in rage and hurt over the things he had done to me, the lies he had told me. And yet he was still my father. I loved him. I missed him. I treasured what little pieces of goodness I had left in my memories of him. I didn't want to sacrifice them to what Alia was about to tell me. But I wanted the truth more. What happened? I whispered. Alia laughed softly. What happened? She fell in love. That's what happened. She was a pretty young woman with big dreams who had grown up in poverty. He was a handsome vampire king who made her feel... She hesitated here, looking for the right word. He gave her something she'd never had before. He gave her a purpose. Of course, she fell in love with him. How could she not? I let out a shaky breath. What did he want her for? I asked. What were they working on together? I didn't know at the time. I only got pieces, sometimes, when she would write to me for advice. I gathered she was trying to restore something that had been lost, or perhaps create something new, something very powerful. But she was extremely secretive. Alia's eyes flicked to Rain. But now, after hearing about Vincent's supposed experimentations, I suspect she was helping him harness his godblood. I blinked in surprise, then glanced at Rain, who shrugged. We got to talking, he said, while you were out. I didn't pry too much about it at the time, Alia said. I didn't care about the machinations of a vampire king. I cared about my sister. She lived with him for years, and at first she seemed happy. That was all that mattered to me. She came here with him once. My brows leapt. Now that was beyond the wildest bounds of my imagination. Vincent? Here? In a shack in the human district of a little town that barely made it onto maps? Alia laughed bitterly. I made that face too when he showed up at our door, and it was... Weaver, it was a strange visit. What was he like back then? I couldn't help but ask, couldn't stop myself. She thought for a moment before answering. I had suspected for a long time what was happening between them. But that night was when I was certain. She looked at him like he was the sun, and he looked at her like she was the moon.
My heart clenched at this, at the thought that maybe they had actually loved each other. Why did it make me so happy to believe that? But Alia's face darkened. But he looked at us like we were nothing. He looked at our life like it was repulsive, and that's when I knew. Maybe he loved her in a way, but he could never love her for what she really was. Loving everything in her but her humanity wasn't loving her at all, even if he wished it was, even if he wanted it with all his being. My heart clenched. Her words slid straight through the weakest spots of the armor that I'd been nursing for months, hell, years. Alia saw the pain on my face. "Vincent was a complicated man," she murmured. "He was lonely. I think perhaps a part of him genuinely wanted to love her. But he had been alive for a very long time in a very cruel world. He had turned himself into something incapable of such a love in order to survive it." "So what changed?" I choked out. "How did she leave?" "She left," Alia said softly, "because of you." A suspicion that hurt to hear confirmed. We had been hearing from her less and less over those last couple of years. I thought she was just preoccupied with her new exciting life. But then, one day, she turned up at my doorstep and told me she was pregnant. She told me she left Vincent and she wasn't going back. Alia let out a shaky breath. I was terrified. I thought, Weaver, help us, she's about to lead an enraged vampire king to our doorstep, and he's going to kill us all. But she said he wouldn't come after her. And he didn't. My brow furrowed. He didn't? Even in my best possible memories of my father, he was never good at letting go of what he considered his. Months passed, and then years, and he never came. This baffled me. Why? That I can't answer. Like I said, maybe he wanted to love her. Maybe he was trying his best. For a while. For a while. Those words hung in the air for several long seconds. Alia's gaze lingered at the wall behind me, as if this next part was too painful to let me see in her eyes. When she met Alchom and they got married, that's when she started to get scared. For us, for you, for Alchom. He had family in Salinae. She thought it would be safer there, in Rishon territory, farther from Vincent's reach and eyes. Alchom. I remembered that name too, faintly. Remembered it called affectionately between rooms in a too small cottage. I remembered big, rough hands and an embrace that smelled like fresh chopped wood. I thought he was my father, I said. You thought he was your father because he became your father. He treated you just as he treated Jonah and Leeson. You were all his children. A sad smile found her lips. He was a good man. Was. Because all these people were dead now. Murdered in an explosion that ripped our house apart. When I received that letter, Alia whispered, it was the worst night of my life. I remembered the wings blotting out the sky. I remembered my mother trying to get me away from the windows. I had thought it was the night I was saved. The night fate and only fate had brought me into Vincent's arms. Did he go there for me? I asked. I didn't want to know the answer. Alia was silent for a long moment. I can only speculate. I think he went to Salinae to destroy his enemies. But I think he went to that house that night for you. Maybe he tried for a long time to let her go. But when the wars started and his enemies were at his throat, his true nature returned. He couldn't bring himself to leave his back exposed. I couldn't breathe. Did you kill them for me, Vincent? Vincent, of course, was silent. He could never answer the hard questions.
Why did he let me live? I whispered. I didn't even mean to say it aloud, but the question was always there, nagging at my soul like a piece of loose thread. If he came here that night for me, why wouldn't he kill me? That would be the logical choice. I was a danger to be mitigated, a wound to be cauterized. He had enemies. He had power to protect, power threatened by no one so much as it was threatened by me. Did he go there that night intending to identify a body? Or make sure he left one behind if I was still alive? If so, why did he change his mind?
I can't answer that, Aurea, Alia said softly. I'm afraid no one will ever be able to.
The truth, but such an agonizing one. I thought you were dead, she went on. For a long time.
He kept you very quiet for the first few years. But then when you got a little older, people began to talk about you. The king's human daughter. I knew it had to be you. Ever since then, I've been following you. During the Qajari, I had friends in Sivrinaj send me updates every trial. And then, these last few months.
She let out a long, slow breath. Her hand fell over mine.
I never thought I would see you again, she choked out. The emotion in that one sentence overwhelming, like it all poured forth at once. Me neither, I wanted to say. But I couldn't even make myself form words. Your mother loved you, she said. I hope you never doubted that, no matter what he might have told you. And so did the rest of us, your siblings, your stepfather, you are so fiercely, fiercely loved. I always hoped that you felt that wherever you were, even if we couldn't tell you it directly. And this was the thing that infuriated me the most, because I didn't know. I knew that I was loved by Vincent, and Vincent alone. But he'd erased everyone else. Let me believe that I was alone in this world. He never deprived me of food or shelter or safety, but he deprived me of that. And it felt almost as horrific.
We sat there in silence for too long, and then Alia rose, that momentary wave of emotion replaced with stoic calm. She went to the dresser, opening the top drawer and rummaging through it. Then she turned back to me, hands cupped.
She would want you to have this.
She dropped a little glittering coil into my outstretched palm. A chain of silver, small black stones interspersed down its length.
I noticed the ring, she added, nodding to my little finger. I'd never seen the necklace before, though. I didn't know it was a full set.
It was indeed a full set. My necklace, my ring, and now the bracelet, the onyx stones, perfect mates to each other. My eyes burned. I closed my hand tight, relishing the press of the stones against my palm, as if I could still feel my mother's touch on them if I tried hard enough.
Thank you, I murmured.
Alia nodded, hands clasped before her, looking a little awkward. She struck me as someone who was uncomfortable with emotion, maybe a family trait, because I was oddly relieved when she said, I should check on dinner, and left us alone. Rain didn't say anything, and I was grateful for it, because I wasn't ready to speak. Instead, he silently sat at the edge of my bed, arms folding around me, offering me an embrace if I wanted it. And mother, I wanted it. I let myself slide into his arms with so little hesitation, I would have been ashamed of myself a month ago. But goddess, how nice that touch felt. Stable and secure and solid. Safety, even when nothing about this world, past or future, was safe right now. I let my head fall against his shoulder, let my eyelashes flutter closed as I breathed in his scent deep. Sweat, and the sky, and the desert. The former may be a bit stronger than the latter. I said against his skin, "You haven't bathed since you've gotten here, have you?" He let out a snort.
Ix's tits, princess. What a charmer you are.
I'm in your armpit. I can't not notice.
I had more important things to worry about than bathing. Besides, I hear some women find a natural musk attractive. Try to have that attitude.
I wasn't about to confirm it, but I did find it a little attractive, or at least strangely comforting. He asked softly,
"You all right?"
All right. What did that word even mean? By any definition, I thought the answer must be no. I'd almost died. I'd led the people who followed me into a bloodbath. I'd lost my kingdom for the second time. I pulled away just enough to give Rain a hard look that said, "What the fuck kind of a question is that?" He sighed.
"Fine, I earned that."
I laid my head against his shoulder again.
"You've talked to the others." "A few letters to..."